I would like to congratulate the organizers for arranging the Happiness Week. 7 days of happiness. It's an achievement. When I read that Napoleon himself confessed that after winning half of the world, he said he had not seen 6 days of happiness in his life. Why it is an achievement? Because to be happy for a day is easy. To be happy for a week is difficult. But to be happy for life, it's a challenge. The real reason is, do we really know what makes us happy? We are hunting for happiness, searching for it, trying and vying for it. But do we really know what really makes us happy? What if God just descended right now on this podium and he announced that all of us have only 10 minutes to live? You say, Swami, our sankalp karacha. Don't worry. I am saying, what if? What if God descended on this podium and he announced that all of us have 10 minutes to live? Swamiji, aap na hun sahit. And then he says that go and do one thing that makes you the happiest. Go. How many of us seriously would have a clue? I think majority would just sit here and say, let the time come. But there may be a few who just want to buy. Will you buy a new car? Would you buy a new bike? Would you change the house you really want? Would you change the curtains? If you had 10 minutes, would you go down and settle an old score with somebody who has hurt you? Would you go and seek forgiveness from your parents? What would you seriously do in 10 minutes that would make you the most happiest? I think majority don't have a clue what really makes us happy. And that's why happiness, which is a very simple word, becomes more and more complex as we start thinking about it. Then we get all the experts, so many people advise, people like us give you katha and philosophy and everything. We always listen. When the sadhus say there's no happiness in the world, we would say yes. We internally you are saying no. And it's our experience and there's nothing wrong. I'm not trying to tell you it's your personal experience. There's a difference between an understanding, an imagination, a philosophy, and reality. We get so many experts, economists, sociologists, anthropologists, thinkers, social thinkers. They have come up and invented a new word. They are trying to reduce happiness into pure mathematics. And they have come up with this idea of the happiness index. I think most of you might have heard the happiness index. I'm not against it. Who am I to challenge anything that comes up on the global scenario? But then they say that obviously the happiness index, Bhutan is somewhere right at the top and India is somewhere right below the middle. So does that mean all of us want to migrate to Bhutan? See, reality is one thing. Statistics are something else. Whenever we are told, and I ask people in this audience or outside, I said, how are you? How are you happy? He says, I'm average. And I really get worried about averages, you know. Because if somebody tells you that on average this river is 4 feet deep, don't cross it. At the shores it's 4 inches, in the middle is 40 feet. In England we used to have a saying that if your head is in the oven and your feet are in the fridge, on average you're in a comfortable position. See, people have this, ke kyu chal ke average saru hai. But ultimately we have no clue of what happiness is. And that's why we have no clue of prayer. Because basically our biggest prayer in our heart is a prayer for happiness. Because we don't have a clue what happiness is, We can infer, we have little clue what prayer is. And that's what we want to discuss and share this evening. Can we focus? Can we fluff out? Can we peel off the layers that hide the real meaning of both happiness and prayer? Similarly, prayer, it's like a birthright. It's the force that is common for all. There is only one energy which is there when you are born and which is there when you die, prayer. Nobody can restrict you. Everybody has a right. But you know what happens when prayers are born in your heart? They're very innocent. When they come to your lips, they become cosmetic. You know, you have to arrange and say the right words in the right way. There's all this correctness, social correctness, political correctness, all this is there. So when prayers are born in your heart, they are innocent. When they come to your lips, they are cosmetic. And by the time they reach God, my God, they get complicated. I'll give you an example, wait, you know. When they reach God, I sometimes wonder and worry what God would do. When your prayer for happiness brings unhappiness to somebody else, that prayer is slightly complicated. Now ask yourself privately in the corners of your mind that whether our prayers for our happiness, if they bring unhappiness to somebody else, should God answer them or not? Tell me. Then don't complain. Majority of our prayers would be bracketed in that way. And I just want to make sure that when such a thing happens, it gets so complicated that we can't find a real solution. That's why our prayers get complicated, because we are so focused on our personal happiness. You probably came here to think that Brahmavihari Swami will be giving us some ideas which will bring us, make us. I have come to give you ideas on being happier. But perhaps, as Mukesh Bhai said, not the way that you think. If we believe so much on exclusive happiness, that we've forgotten that happiness has to be inclusive. So prayer should be the basis of an inclusive way of life, inclusive happiness. That's why Yogiji Maharaj, Pramukh Swami Maharaj's guru, he always said one thing and one thing alone all his life, even when he was about to sleep, when he was waking up, after puja, when something good happened, when something bad happened, he would always say, Bhagavan saunu bhalu karo. And apde, Bhagavan saunu bhalu karo, atlanu to nahi brackets hoy. We have parentheses and we have a huge number of list of number of names where you say, anu to nahi aj. We don't have that heart to pray like that, inclusive prayers. More than Yogiji Maharaj, Bhagavan Swaminarayan laid the foundation of the Swaminarayan Sampradaya, and he writes in the Shikshapatri, Sarva Jiva Hitavaha. Your life, your ideas, your prayers, your emotion should be that it brings joy to every living being. Sarva Jiva Hitavaha. The great Indian wisdom, the Subhashits, they teach us, Sarvetra Sukhina Santu, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarva Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschit Dukhamapnuyat. Let all be happy, let all be healthy, let all see good in each other, and let none be miserable. Look at the prayer. We belong to a culture which talks about inclusive happiness, inclusive prayer. But the climax are, the oldest documents in the world, the oldest manuscript of mankind, and they are the Rig Vedas. The Rig Vedas, in the times of our rishis, they had pondered and contemplated and almost solved every issues that were faced by the humankind in that time. And they touch upon every aspect from life, emotions, mind, philosophy, medicine, spirituality, in every aspect of the human life. And you would be surprised, the Rig Vedas have turned every aspect into a form of prayer. What are the Rig Vedas? They are prayers to the divine for the things that you and me seek. in the form of a prayer. So it's important. Prayer is a simple application to God, our want. But there's a difference. To your juniors, you order. To your seniors, you ask. To your elders, you request. To your owners, you beg. And to the Creator, you pray. It is important. It's the same thing we are doing. There is nothing else. But the tone, the feelings, they change because your entire communication and connection changes. So today my topic is the power of prayer for inclusive happiness. Happiness for all. Only then a prayer is powerful. If you don't have this inclusive idea, then your prayer is weak. It is meek. It is not the wonder power that we are talking about. I want to tell you, we desire, we live on and live off exclusivity. Dress different, walk different, think different, wear different, live different, carry yourself differently. But I'm trying to tell you, there is no eternal happiness in exclusivity. There is only happiness in inclusivity. And if you understand that, we will be walking on something else. First of all the visible symbols we see in life, perhaps they are not happiness and they are not even worth praying for. For example, just because we laughed just now, does it mean we are all happy? Yes or no? Come on, think a bit. I'm not here just to hear yeses. Just because we laugh, does it mean we are happy? Because sometimes a madman laughs, a serial killer laughs. Sometimes when we are bored, we laugh. Sometimes after getting so angry, we laugh. So laughter does not just mean happiness. Similarly, just because you cry, does that mean you are sorrowful? I have seen, and you have seen, so many sports people after they win a gold medal or the Wimbledon or the Open Tennis Championship, they break down into tears. So laughter is not just a symbol for happiness. It's beautifully put down by Charles Chaplin. Charlie Chaplin, during his difficult times, he was one of the finest actors. He gave the media movie a whole different scenario. But he writes in his own difficult times, and when he was passing through critical moments, he has written that I alone could make the whole world laugh, but the whole world together could not make me laugh. If you are suffering from a bout of unhappiness or depression, it becomes a whole different thing. Laughter or tears, visible symbols, they just move away. There is a different world which is slightly borderless, and that's what we need to penetrate to understand the concept. Similarly, what we pray for, sometimes we pray for laughter or joy, sometimes we pray for power. In these times, you know, when we start praying for power, we think the prime minister, the president, or the president of a nation that is important would be and should be the most happiest person. But is he? After almost 24 to 28 elections and sub-elections, which Abraham Lincoln had lost, continuously he had kept losing, and after that such a huge journey, he enters the White House, and the White House chief portrait painter, Francis Carpenter, who would always paint the first face of the new president. While painting Abraham Lincoln, Francis Carpenter has written that I painted the saddest face on this earth. He said, I couldn't imagine, he was literally dripping misery. Literally dripping misery. Power and happiness have no connection. It's an illusion. We sometimes think that there is a connection, but there isn't. What about fame? Everybody would think, no, no, Swami, fame, yes, yes. Fame makes you feel happy. Look at Michael Jackson. I don't think any one of us could even ever dream of such fame, such popularity. When we were young children, I know before we became sadhus, so I know that world as well. So I don't think any one of us could even dream of such fame and such popularity. But you know what he said? It hurts to be me. It hurts to be me. The older generation which is here, because I don't want to leave them out, let's talk about Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley had fame, wealth, popularity, success, and he introduced new trends into the music world. But when he died, he had almost 10 different drugs in his bloodstream. But he has written about himself, and he has written that my life was like a ping pong ball bouncing on a rough road. Happiness, what we technically pray for. But then we have the ancient traditions. Look at Lord Buddha. He renounced everything that we pray for. Shanti thi vichar kar jo ghare jaina. He renounced everything that we pray for. Power, wealth, comforts, security. Everything that you and me, if you club your prayers and make segregation, everything that we pray for, Gautam Buddha renounced. And he got what we don't have, happiness. Imagine, if you look at it, that how Gautam Buddha, and that's what Lord Krishna has said in the Gita. Lord Krishna has said, Tyagat Shantihi Anantaram. It is not in attachment that you find happiness. It is in detachment that you find happiness. Krishna has gone one step further and he says to Arjuna, Ashantasya Kutaha Sukham. He said, his whose mind is disturbed by desires, by emotions of love and hate, by jealousy, by anger, his whose mind is constantly in a ripple and unbalance, where is peace for him? So ultimately, if you want to experience the greatest power of prayer, we need to pray for a stable mind. And if we can do that, then you are automatically vaccinated. It's like spiritual vaccination. We get so many different things and diseases coming over. The moment we are vaccinated, it takes us into a different world. So let us understand the most important part, that if to enter the mind, if happiness is a state of the mind and not a state of affairs, which we have seen, if happiness is not the physical things that we have, it is the internal, the mental, the spiritual things that we have. If that is so, then if there is any power that can penetrate and enter the state of the mind, it is the power of prayer. And why do I say it is the ultimate power? And why would I say it is perhaps not the last resort, it is the only resort? Why am I saying this? All the other ideas, whether it's motivation, whether it's values, whether it's positive thinking, they all help in happiness. But all of them are your individual effort. Prayer is the only force which is a combined effort between you and God. And when you have a combined effort now in the recent environment of elections, you and God are a majority. Forget about the world. If you and God are on the same page, you are a majority. And when we understand that we have the support of God, it makes a big difference. Once there was a young boy in the courtyard of his home, there was a huge stone. His father asked, okay, go and move the stone. The young boy started pushing it, pulling it, pushing it, started thinking, but he could not do much. After 1 hour, the father is moving across and the young boy says, Dad, I can't move it. The dad said, you know, try your hard. Use all your strength. He said, "Dad, can't you see I'm using all my strength? I'm pushing it, pulling it. It just doesn't move. The stone is so huge. I'm so small." Dad said, "You are not using all your strength." He said, "I am." He was perspiring, heaving. And the stone wasn't moving. He said, "Dad, I am using all my strength." He said, "No, you're not. You have not asked me to help." The fullest strength of a son is the help of his father. The fullest strength of each of you is the help of God. Most of the time, that's why prayer is the most profound power that we have. And the reason is because it's a combination between you and God. It's not you alone. Of course, it's true. And I don't think all of you can blame yourself. We do use prayer as a spare wheel and not the driving wheel. And even if our car keeps getting punctured again and again, and we have to constantly repair our spare wheel again and again, we still tend to use prayer as a spare wheel. And why? In our times of crisis, catastrophes, difficulties, challenges, we always reach out to God. Once a man who was an atheist all his life, and he fell ill, and his illness created so much pain, that he literally started shouting, "God, where are you?" And God suddenly said, "Yes, you called?" He said, "God, why have you given me so much pain?" He said, "To start a conversation." He said, "All my life I have been trying to talk to you when you were young, when you were a teenager, when you were a youth, when you were an adult, when you were successful, when you were glorious, you never bothered but a little pain and you said, God." So sometimes God gives you pain just to start a conversation. It is important. Don't get worried about it. Don't get shocked by it. It is little jogging you and waking you up and to make sure that you start talking. The most famous philosopher, Schopenhauer. In his philosophy, there was no God. And he was an atheist, a confirmed atheist, and he relished the idea of being an atheist. But when he fell ill during his death time, in his death time, he started shouting, "God, oh God, oh God." And some of his teachers, some of his sishyas, they came down and said, "Hey, Schopenhauer, there's no God in your philosophy." He said, "In suffering, no philosophy is complete without God." That's why perhaps Voltaire, the father of rational thinking, he says, if there was no God, it would be necessary to invent him. For the safekeeping of society, for the safekeeping of our mind and our stability, for the comforts that we find. So, God, prayer helps you to connect. In pain, prayer helps you to comfort. It gives you comfort. You might have heard of a very famous Hollywood actor, Steve McQueen. In the 1970s, he was the highest paid actor in the world. Because he was a former army man. Because he was a great actor and flamboyant. He was arrogant. Arrogant to such a level that when he was the highest paid actor in the world, for 4 years continuously, he refused to act. Aapre to dhando chalte to kari devo pade na. 4 years continuously, he refused to act. This was the arrogance of Steve McQueen. He needed nobody. He cared for nobody because everybody needed him. But when he discovered that he had cancer, it is said there was such a transformation that he started spending all his mornings and evenings, even his afternoons, lost in prayer. And then he writes that I was trying to find a cure and I found God. So don't be disheartened by the difficulties you have. Maybe they are leading you to a certain level where which will refine and hone your spiritual abilities and you will discover something else in you, inside you. And that's why Lincoln often said that many a times, I have been so miserable that if I divided my misery, unhappiness equally upon all the people of this earth, there would not be one single smiling face on this earth. So much pain. And he often said that sometimes when I find that everyone on this earth has deserted me, quote unquote, and when I find there is nobody next to me or with me, but at that time when I look deep down within my heart, I still feel that I have one friend left and he is God and he revives me. Prayer has that power to rejuvenate you. Wherever you are, whatever difficulties you have, stop feeling pity for yourself, thinking that you are the worst and the most difficult in situation. You still have the ability to reach out to God and rise out like a phoenix bird from the ashes of your own misery. If you can do that, prayer has the power to bring you out. But then I also want to take you through examples and facts that sometimes you might find that it's not misery, it's difficulty, it's just fear. I'd like to take you to the Second World War. The Second World War was perhaps the most horrible war the world has ever seen. It is estimated that somewhere between 60 to 85 million people died. Okay? And the climax was, all the same thinking, there is an estimate that almost 61 countries participated directly and 101 countries participated indirectly. Like 100 countries at war. It's a really horrible scenario which we can't even take. But then I want to still take you further. That in that Second World War, the most crucial date was 6th June 1944, D-Day. I think all of you must have heard the name D-Day. D was the day. H was the hour. The color of that war was orange. And the code of that war was Mickey Mouse. This was how well this D-Day was planned. Why? On the British side, across the English Channel, there were 3 million soldiers of Britain and American and all the Allied soldiers had lined up. 3 million. On the French side, that means Germany had won almost everywhere till Normandy. There was a whole wall of more than 80,000 to 100,000 fully equipped and armored German military, army. Now the problem was, when should they go? How should they land? It wasn't easy. Eisenhower, Montgomery, all the other, you know, the leaders were coming down discussing, and no, it took them 23 days just to think yes or no. How confusing it was. You're putting the life of almost 3 million soldiers in jeopardy. They all knew that there would be heavy casualties. You're going by sea. They're sitting on a cliff, then climbing almost 100 foot onto the cliff. It's impossible. If anybody gets a chance, you should read the description of D-Day. You would know what heroism is, what bravery is, what faithfulness is, what fear is. Every emotion of the humankind you will get in that. Now what I'm going to tell you, that before there were boats, 54,000 cooks. They had special priests trying to keep the spirit of the soldiers alive. The climax is, when all the soldiers, the 150,000 who were going to go on the first day, when they all got lined up, they were carrying tons of equipment, guns, rockets, grenades, equipment, ammunition. They did not have even the strength to carry even a handkerchief more, it's described. They refused to carry photographs of even their loved ones because it was too much weight. And when the war began, to your and my surprise, 67% of the soldiers were carrying a small Bible in their pocket. See the power of prayer? Prayer has the power to convert fear into faith. It has the power. Otherwise, I'm giving you incidents from history to bolster and embolden your own life and our lives. It has the power, and if you think about it, it takes you there. To bring it to very close, you know, day-to-day life, every exam time, our mandirs are flooded. When the exams are going on, little children, they flood. I'll tell you very truthfully. They come, and wherever we are in the temple, they'll find any sadhu. You know, and just like, Swamiji, give me a photo, give me a murti, give me a photo, give me a murti. Exam times is flooded. And during result times, again is flooded by parents. See, children want to get through the exam and parents want to make sure they pass. You know, there's no link between them. If they link, then it would be easier. But ultimately, I'm trying to say that we do use prayer and our part as a part of our spare wheel in the times of crisis. But I'm saying it's not wrong. What's wrong if you connect to God for whatever reason? There's nothing wrong. But think. If in your crisis, prayer can give you comfort. If in your fear, it can generate faith. If in your helplessness, it can give you hope. If in your aimlessness, it can give you aim. In your crisis, if it can give you comfort, then what if you do it regularly? Imagine what it would do to you. My idea is simple. There is no compulsion, because religion has to be as gentle as a breeze. You should enjoy it. The moment I start forcing you, it becomes a gale, and you'll shut your window and go away. If all religious leaders understood this, that we have to be as gentle as a breeze, it would turn religion into magic. So fine, use it at a time of your crisis, but also think that if you use it regularly, it can bring you so much more benefit. But there is a subtle question. Again, Mukesh Pai said that you should not doubt a prayer. As a sadhu, I must also explore this issue as well. You doubt. And again, it's a human trait. If we don't discuss it here, where will we? And I know I'm treading stormy waters when I'm starting this issue. But I think it needs to be faced and grappled with. Sometimes the bull has to be caught by the horns. A very famous Victorian scientist, Francis Galton. He was a mathematician, a statistician, who invented eugenics. And that was done in 1872. Don't think eugenics is a modern world. 1872, he invented the idea of eugenics, morphic relations. Okay? Francis Galton. He writes, Shantiti Sambarjo. He writes, and which really threw me off balance, he writes that if prayers really worked, then the British king and queen, they should be the oldest living couple on this earth. Because every day the British people, morning and evening, they pray, long live the king and long live the queen. When they pray every day, how come they are not the longest living couple? That means prayers don't work. You know, suddenly, then you might argue and I might argue, okay, because they were not praying with their heart. Now this is my question. That if prayers worked, then all the religious leaders of this earth should be the longest living people. Because obviously their devotees really pray sincerely. Now my question is very simple. Suppose you said a prayer and it didn't work. Can you scientifically say that prayers don't work? Just because your prayer didn't work? Just because you can't climb Mount Everest, can you say that man can't climb Mount Everest? Come along where I am coming from. How many of us are going to reach the moon? Come on. How many from these 7 billion people have gone to the moon? 1? 12? And if you count all the population of the humankind ever since the first man walked this earth, it will be billions and billions and billions of billions and billions of billions of people if just 2 or 3 people have reached the moon. Is it right to say that we can reach the moon? Yes or no? Why are you so confused? Yes! Our society, understand this, our society, our culture, our science, it grows because of single successes and ignores the mass failures. Just because Edison experimented 10,000 times and he could not get light, does it mean we will live in darkness? All he has to do is to make one experiment work and the world is in brightness. All if in this whole earth, if 7 billion prayers did not work, even if one worked, then prayers work. We build on the successes or not failures, even you and me. Now I want to ask you, everybody present in this hall, have you not had even one experience where your prayer has worked? Yes. Then why am I standing here and giving you a lecture? How many times do you have to touch fire before you understand it is hot? Once, and not even once sometimes. On the experience of others, so at least learn from the experience of others that prayers work. Even one has worked, it is going to work for you and the world. Because our civilization is built on that. Look at our hope. Just because we are having wars after wars after wars, despite so many wars, do we still believe in peace? Despite so many divorces, do we still believe in marriage? Tell me the truth. Amra chokrana to karao soj. I have seen 2 divorces making sure that their child gets married. I go, wow, this is experience. I'm just trying to say, so despite our difficulties, despite so many deaths, do we still believe in life? So even if your prayer now and then sometimes is not answered, still believe in prayers, one day they will be. If you have this ideology and climate, nothing can go wrong with you and me. We can move ourselves to different heights, and I want to ask you, and let's see if we can understand. The most important part, and I want to take you through history as well, that even if one incident confirms that prayer works. This is how society moves. This is how single breakthroughs move. You know, you might know that the power of prayer is believing in the things we can't see. And the reward of prayer is seeing the things we believe in. If you believe in things, even if you can't see them, and through prayer, you will be able to see the things which you can't believe. Incredible things happen in this world. And these are some of the examples I want to spread before you, that they are totally undeniable and they are not done by us or his or somebody else. They are obvious facts in history. Everybody must have heard of the mission Apollo 13. Apollo 11 went to the moon. Then the 7th manned mission, Apollo 13, it took off on 11th April 1970. 3 astronauts commanded by Jim Lovell. There was Hayes, and the 3rd astronaut was Swigert. All 3 were there. Everybody was happy and thinking this is a 7th manned mission to the moon and man would be landing on the moon. When they were about 200,000 miles away from the earth, very close to the moon, about to enter the lunar orbit. Okay? What happened in a rocket, I will not take you into a deeper science, but I think you should understand, there is the service module which is huge. Service module which has the power, the oxygen, the fuel, everything is in the service module. Above the service module, you have the command module, which is small. Then you have the lunar module,
which separates from the command module and goes into the moon, lands on the moon. What happened? With no fault of anybody, no technical fault, somehow the oxygen and the hydrogen tanks in the service module exploded. The entire service module was destroyed. The command module, with limited power, 200,000 miles out in space, the command module and lunar module were the only modules surviving. They said there was not enough oxygen. It was getting freezing. There was no light, no water. Even for one man for 2 days, there were three men hoping to survive 4 days. It wasn't possible technically. So ground control kept guiding, and they found there's nothing else they could do. There was not enough energy. Then they lost communication with all the astronauts. It wasn't possible, they write, it wasn't possible even technically for them to return safely. They only dependent that if we take the orbit of the moon, you know, if you have a trajectory and if something's going round and round, it builds up speed, and then you break off trajectory, so you get that propulsion. So they were counting on natural forces now. With the right firing, they would come back to the Earth. But nobody literally could believe that these astronauts could reach the Earth safely. It was then that the American Senate passed a resolution asking the whole of America to kneel down in prayer. Resolution. Our parliament passes a bill. I'm just trying to tell you, for prayer. The whole of American Senate passed a resolution that the whole of America should kneel down in prayer. Stock exchanges stopped. Companies stopped. Corporations stopped. People came out on the streets, not in the just churches, in places, in gymnasium. Everybody started praying. Even in the ground control, people started praying. Okay? I am not undermining all the scientific genius and the technological genius. To justify the power of prayer, I can't say it didn't work. But when they felt nothing could work, the only thing, like I said, not the first resource or the last resort, but the only resort. And when they prayed, nobody knows how, suddenly the command module appeared, re-entered the Earth, and on 17th April came down safely. And they also published a small medallion on the other side, Apollo 13, and two hands of prayer, thank God. Now if you ask me, if something like this happens again, will it work? God help them. But if it has worked once and you don't have a clue, don't doubt it. It is always better to be faithful than doubtful. It is always better. I'll give you a very simple example why faith and prayer works better. Suppose all of us are on a spaceship. All of us. All of us are bound to a planet, unknown planet. And when we land onto that planet, we find out that we have only 2 days of rations, food and oxygen available, all of us. Now there are two types of thoughts. All our scientific information tells us that this planet is inhabited, there's no life there, forget it. And the other thing that keeps telling us, let us search for life, there may be. Okay? What would you do? There'll be a group of us who say, no, no, just sit down and die. But what is the wiser thing to do, even if you are dying in 2 days? Make an effort and search. Even if there is no God up there, make an effort. If there is, he'll be happy. If there isn't, what's the problem? The positivity of prayer takes you and connects you to God, and that's what makes you much stronger. So when Apollo 13 returned, we are saying that prayer does work. Forget about a global event. Take an individual event. You might have heard, and I believe most of you would have, of Peter Sellers. Again, a great actor. Peter Sellers, in 1980, he gave an interview. He says his plane was flying over the Bermuda Triangle. And suddenly he didn't know what happened. Suddenly the plane nosedived It dropped from 48,000 feet height to Sidhu straight to 24,000 feet. And he knew they had no control and there was no way anything could be brought to normalcy. He writes, suddenly out of the blue a Hindu mantra came into my mind. The Shanti Path. Om Dyoh Shanti Rantariksha Gum Shanti Prithvi Shanti Rapa Shanti Rokha Daya Shanti. He said, this Hindu mantra came to my mind and I started repeating reflexively more than 20 times and just miraculously the plane achieved its altitude and I was saved. Somebody can give credit to anything they like, but I believe that the mantra saved me. If a Hindu mantra can save somebody that far over Bermuda Triangle, I think it can save you in your home every day. It is important that it is not a question of just a global event. It is not just a question of an individual event. It is also a question of personal relations. You'll tell me, Swami, how will prayer help me in my personal relations? Of course it can. Prayer changes the nature of your mind and your heart. It has the power to influence the nature of the mind and the heart of people around you. Again, this example is absolute spot on with facts and figures. It is absolute scientific. Once there was a very big sailor, his name John Clay, K-L-E. In 1975, on 30th June, you know, I'm reading out from history. On 30th June 1975, he was a sailor sailing boats for almost 20 years. His hobby was to sail offshore Manhattan, where the sea is choppy, it's very cold. What happened in evening time while he was sailing, a hurricane had come and the tail of hurricane just capsized his boat. He was in the waters and he found the waters were so freezing. And when he looked, he saw that the shore was almost 4 miles away. If you are a sailor, does not mean you can swim the English Channel. You know, you're not supposed to. But he saw that it's not possible for him to swim right across. So he was waiting for a coast guard. The coast guards came, they didn't notice him. The helicopters came, they didn't notice him. It started getting darker and darker. It was freezing and freezing. His hands and feet, his face, everything started getting numb. He tried everything that he could do, but he could not really come to terms of whether he would be saved or not. Suddenly, you know, he looked at and he was attracted by the lights of the Empire State Building. Mark and keep this filed away in your mind. He got hooked. He was mesmerized by the lights of the Empire State Building. And somehow, every time he looked at the Empire State Building, he got renewed energy. He got renewed energy. So he started swimming. He started swimming. In the middle, he felt he's dead. Again, he started swimming. He tried to swim on his back. He could not breaststroke. Everything, he could not do it. Suddenly, when he was about to die, a floating buoy, you know, small bowl, which they keep on the seas for markers. A floating plastic buoy, it just came straight towards his chest. He writes in his account that if it had been even 6 inches away from my hand, my hands were so frozen that I could not have caught it. So he came to his chest. He held on to it and he started swimming and swimming and swimming. Almost after 5 to 6 hours, he reached the shore, hypothermic, admitted the hospital, and it was like a miraculous swim in this cold water, and he had survived. Next morning, his friend Buck came. He didn't even know this guy was ill. His friend came and he said, you know, John, something amazing happened yesterday. I said, what? He said, all my life I've been living in New York, I had never gone to the Empire State Building. But me and my wife Sue, we were driving across the streets of Manhattan and suddenly I got a wave that I want to go to the Empire State Building. And we climbed up in the lift and from the top deck, I put a penny inside the binoculars and me and my wife, we looked and took turns and kept looking at the sea. And we were discussing the how much you love the sea and how much the sea loves you. And I kept telling her that if there is one man who can swim these seas, it would be John. He said, every time I looked around into the sea, and this guy had tears. He said, every time I looked at the Empire State Building, I kept getting renewed energy that I can make it. I can make it. Even that is not finished yet. Wait. He had a friend. 2 days later, he got a letter from the Caribbeans, written by his friend Hick. Hick writes that it is 30th June, evening time, approximately the same time this guy was on the sea. It was posted on 30th June. He says, 30th June, somehow I'm lying on the beach and I'm overcome and overpowered by thoughts of you. And I'm wondering that you are the finest swimmer. My heart kept praying for you. I don't know why. But there was one odd thing that kept coming in my mind. And it was almost like a nightmare. The numbers 978, 978, 978. So I don't know, he wrote to John. John, I don't know why, but these numbers kept coming to my mind, but I always thought of you and I prayed very hard on that night. John Clay is in his bed. He tells his wife, can you bring the bowl which I have carried as a souvenir? When they brought the bowl, the numbers on the bowl were 978. I am asking you, do you think that you are alive and happy just because of your efforts? No. It's so many little prayers that your children have done, your parents have done, your friends have done, people who you don't know. Everybody helps you. Remember when you were born? When we were born, we survived because of others. You know, a child or a baby makes no choices. Whatever is given to him, he survives because of that. And when we are old, we will also survive because of others. Whatever food is placed, you'll have to eat. When you and I were born, we survived because of others. When we will become old, we will survive because of others. But somehow in the middle, we have become so arrogant and we think others survive because of us, but you survive because of others. So many people around you have been praying for you that results in your happiness. Why don't you, for a change, pray for others? Prayers work. They work at the global level, they work at the individual level, they work at the relationship level. But prayers also work for your health. I don't want to go deep into it, but I want to just summarize very shortly so you know. Prayers also work for your health. A very famous doctor, Dr. Herbert Benson of Harvard Medical College. He has spent 35 years of his life and on the effect of prayer on health. So I'm not trying to give you one-off experiment or a person who has just something, one thing, and he's found it and he's advocating it. No marketing here. And Herbert Benson writes that after clinically studying numbered and named patients in thousands. Some experiments had 393, some had 1,000, some had 1,500, some had 1,100. Over 35 years, in conducting experiments where patients were prayed for, some were not prayed for, some knew they were prayed for, some did not know, and there were double-blind experiments where the people who prayed did not know the patients, and the patients did not even know they were prayed for. Double-blind. He said, at the end of all my conclusions, he writes and he expresses himself in an interview, he says that concentration and control of random thoughts is done by prayer and it is very important for health. Then he writes, repeating a prayer again and again. What does that do? Repeating a prayer again and again, it helps you concentrate. He says, repeating a prayer again and again, it helps you control random thoughts and makes you concentrate. And my experiments have proved that it helps you cure a disease. Forget about your faith. Faith comes in later. If you repeat the same mantra, it could be Om, 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 Om. It could be Swaminarayan, Swaminarayan, Swaminarayan. It could be Shri Krishna, Inama, Shri Krishna, Inama. Any mantra. The simple idea of repeating. What do you do in an exercise? You repeat rounds, push-ups, press-ups. I'm trying to tell you that repeating a prayer. Herbert Benson writes, it helps to cure a disease. So if somebody has cancer, somebody has TB, somebody has difficulties, somebody has problems, somebody has indigestion, I'm being very honest. If you repeat a prayer again and again, it has the power to control random thoughts. Japa random thoughts, so it controls them. Concentration and your body and your disease is cured. He writes further, it is absolute evident that the metabolism decreases, the heart rate decreases, the breathing rate decreases. He writes that the brain activity decreases, and now I believe that future physicians will not only prescribe medicine, they will also write a prescription for prayers. Pray 3 times and 2 times a day. This was discussed in front of Pramukh Swami when Swamiji was in Dubai, and there were all devotees sitting around. Some were from Ahmedabad, so you'll understand why I'm telling you. So we were all seated, and somebody asked Pramukh Swami, Swami, when we pray to you, does God receive the prayer? Swami said very naturally, innocently, Swami said, whatever you give us, we give it directly to God. Then the devotee said, then why don't we get an answer? Then Pramukh Swami explained very nicely. He said, the governor gets all the applications, but he only answers the one he chooses to answer. So, they will prescribe a prayer for every patient, and if the patient says that what if this doesn't work, the only answer would be double the dose. This is one dose which will not damage you. You can't go around taking 10 tablets in a day, but prayer is fine, no problem. All I'm trying to tell you that Herbert Benson says that there will be a prescription for prayers in the future. But then, again, I want to also very sorrily tell us that sometimes we find that we are too busy to pray. We feel that ultimately we are too busy or we are too tied up. I didn't get time. I just want to tick off. The father of microbiology, Louis Pasteur, he was always 24 hours busy in his lab, but he wrote that always prayed while I worked in my lab. Prayer is not something that you need to have special time to pray. You can continue praying. It's your feelings. Sometimes Victor Hugo writes that whatever the attitude of your body, the soul is always on its knees. Whatever the attitude of your body, the soul is always on its knees. Like I said, even in war, civil war, many times Lincoln was found to be praying on his horse. Gandhi, he often said that I would have been a lunatic long ago without prayer, being the head of the Quit India movement. Independence, I don't think there's a greater work or project for anybody than independence of India. Once he had forgotten to pray, and he was sitting in his bed at night crying his eyes out because he had forgotten to pray once. So how particular all these people have been. But I also want to tell you, because today also happens to be the birthday of Abdul Kalam, our beloved former president. Whenever he comes to Pramukh Swami, he always asks for blessings, but once Pramukh Swami gave him a mada. And from that day onwards, Abdul Kalam, he always tells us, whenever we go, he brings out that mada. He said, I have not let even one day go without chanting a mada. If people like that, who have enough reasons to be busy, still find and carve out time for prayer, why can't you and me? We have to do that. I am telling you that if you have purity in your heart, you have the ultimate power of seeing God in each and every one, in each and everything, let alone a pure sadhu. If you have purity, the ultimate power of prayer is the ability to see God in each and everything. And that's when we find out that even if the great people who are around us, if they have found and they have been captivated and motivated by prayer in their times, in their good time, then why can't we? The reason is simple. The last question I want to answer very quickly. The reason is simple is, do we know the art of prayer? First we said, do prayers work? They work. Do they work for everyone? Yes, everyone. Will they work for me? Yes. Then why don't they work? What is the art of prayer? It is very simple. Bhagavan Swaminarayan has written, Gadgad Kanthe Prarthna Karvi. There should be a vibrant intensity. When does a vibrant intensity happen? Once a devotee, he came to Ramakrishna Paramahansa, he says that, I want to find God, I want to search out God, I want moksha. Ramakrishna Paramahansa was having a bath in the river and this guy kept pestering him. Straight away, Ramakrishna Paramahansa got hold of his neck, put his head under water and held it there. That guy was struggling for life now. He had come for liberation. When you're struggling for life, after a couple of minutes of that guy flailing and floundering in water, Ramakrishna Paramahansa, he brought him out. And that guy, he said, all I asked you is a question for liberation. Why did you do this? Then Ramakrishna ji asked, then while you were under water, did you think of your family? He said, no. Did you think of the good food? No. Do you think of comfort? No. What did you think of? He said, I only thought of just coming out, coming out, coming out. He said, when you have such an intensity for meeting God, come to me. Prayer is the importance of, Bhagavan Swaminarayan said, vibrant intensity, gadgad kante. How will that come? So there are four elements I would just leave you with for your family, for yourself, for practicality. First, helplessness. When you pray, don't be proud of your own achievements and don't tell God that I can do this much, this much, this much, and you just do this much. That's not the way. When you pray to God, you should be totally helpless. You have to tell Him there is nobody and no one, nothing for me, nothing in me. God help me. Helplessness. To such an extent when Draupadi, imagine, when her clothes will be torn apart in a bull by Dushasan. In the middle of the assembly, Draupadi first starts searching for Yudhishthir, Arjun, Bhim. All of them held their heads low. Then Dronacharya, Bhishma, Dhritarashtra. All of them held their heads low. None of the person present in the entire assembly, the Mahabharata assembly, could actually come or did come for the help of Draupadi. Then at the last resort, she shouted for Krishna and Krishna helps and she's saved. Normally people say that Draupadi asked Krishna, why did you take so long? And Krishna said, why did you take so long? Okay? But I'm saying when you have such an intensity, it is the intensity they'll see you through, whether it's during exams, a new job, whether it's a family problem, whether it's illness, whether it's moving a house. If you pray even a little while with great intensity, it helps. The most important part, number two, so there should be helplessness in prayer, is thankfulness. Thank God for all the good things you have. You have a prayer. He says, Swami, mane koi problem nahi, I'm easy going. So what about the good things you've had? Thank God for making you. Thank God for all the good things that you've had. If you just make a list tonight, I think it will take away the flake of misery from your face. So ultimately, thankfulness. Thankfulness, not just thank God for the things you have. Now I want you to go a step ahead. Thank Him for the things He has not given you. Bhava Guru Shaya. Thank Him for the speedy car you wanted and you didn't take, so you didn't have an accident. Thank Him. Thank Him that you wanted to be a doctor and you did not, and you have become a dentist and you are the finest dentist in this city. Thank Him. Thank Him That you saw so many people in your marriage and you said no, and so many said no to you, so you have a wonderful wife. Thank Him. I'm telling you very honestly. Thank Him because of the things that did not happen to you. You are what you are. Not just thank Him for the things you have. You know, if God fulfilled all the prayers that you and me asked, we would be really miserable. I started thinking myself, that if God fulfilled every prayer that I had said in my life, how many times we've always felt, sometimes if you get upset at home, you want to run away. At every small argument, you contemplate a divorce. On average, people say, scientists say that on average, a human being contemplates of committing suicide 2.8 times in his lifetime. Hamadi ketlai na hota ya. It is good God doesn't fulfill all our prayers, so thank Him for not giving the things you have asked. It is important that will take you through, so that is thankfulness. But the most important also is heartfulness. Heartfulness is to cleanse your heart. Like Prahlad said. Prahlad said, God, I thank you not for protecting me physically, but if you are God and I am your devotee, protect me from my inner vices, baser instincts. Protect me from anger, lust, hate. So when you have a heartfulness, then automatically your prayers are connected. But the most and the last most important part of prayer is selflessness. I began the entire lecture that we are so exclusive that all our prayers are selfish. I want to end that the strongest and the most powerful prayer is a selfless prayer. Prayer which is not said for you. But even if you want to say it for yourself, say it. But most important is, have you ever tried to really pray for your friend, for your family member, for somebody that you love, for somebody who gave you a seat on the bus, for somebody who was just a little kind when you went to a shop? If you have a selfless prayer, not for yourself. Pramukh Swami often says, in the joy of others lies our own. Bhagavan Swaminarayan had prayed when he became the head of the Swaminarayan Sampradaya. He has said, oh God, he said to Ramanand Swami, that on this day, I ask for two prayers. That if any devotee is destined to suffer from food or clothing, let that lot come to me and not a devotee. And if he is destined to suffer from a pain of a single scorpion sting, let every pore of mine suffer a million scorpion stings, but devotee be protected from a little bit of pain. Selfless prayer is very important. I'm not asking you to reach that benchmark. We don't have to all have to run as fast as Usain Bolt. But we have to run. Prayer is not a monopoly of any religion. It is not a monopoly of any devotee. It's not a monopoly. Prayer is universal. Otherwise God would be confused. Which language should you pray in? There are 7,000 languages and 40,000 dialects on this earth. God doesn't ask which language. Then which religion has a right to prayer? There are 4,200 religions and hundreds of thousands denominations, sampradayas. Then you might ask, which caste, which color, which class? Who has a right to prayer? God only says, He doesn't ask the language, He doesn't ask a dialect, He doesn't ask the religion, He doesn't ask the sampradaya. He only asks, do you have a purity of heart, purity of mind, and purity of purpose? If you have these three things, then prayers are your birthright and prayers are your death right. Thank you very much.